Hi, I'm Lisa Levin.
And I'm Julie Sapper.
We're the co-founders of Run Farther and Faster and co-hosts of the podcast under the same name.
Well, we started this podcast as a Boston Marathon-focused podcast based on the experiences from our combined 31 finishes. We cover all things running-related.
We've coached runners of all levels and goal distances all over the world for over 13 years.
Thanks so much for joining us. We are so excited you're here.
Hey, Julie.
Hey, Lisa. It's been quite a week.
It has. So it's very good to see you. And I always really appreciate these opportunities to connect. And I think connections at this point right now are really important to all of us.
Absolutely. Just having the routine of seeing you today provides me great comfort. So thank you. And you know, before we launch into our podcast, we have a wonderful guest. It would be so disingenuous of us to not address what is happening in our world. The world is on fire right now. We feel it. We feel it deeply as Jewish women. We feel it as mothers. And all of the devastation and suffering that we're seeing day to day is unbearable. And we know so many of our listeners, all of our listeners, no doubt, are feeling this so deeply. And we do as well. Everyone is impacted in some way. No one, it's not a contest as to who's hurting more. It's not a contest as to who's right or who's wrong right now, because we can't solve this. There was a horrific terrorist attack, and now there are civilians who are suffering in Israel. There are civilians, of course, suffering in Gaza. It's a terrible, terrible situation. And the enemy is Hamas. And it's just awful, and we can't solve it. But the one thing that we can do right now is we can listen to what our esteemed guest a few weeks ago, Brad Stahlberg, told us. And that is something that I think is so important and critical right now. And that is to respond rather than react, because none of us have the answers. And what we mean by that is, listen to his words, is pause, process, plan, and proceed. I think we all feel so deeply and we want to react right away to everything. But I think in this time, in this tumultuous time, it's important to do what we can to respond and also care for each other. And we're all human beings. We all live together. We're all here. And we all have very passionate feelings. I know I do. I know you do. We all do. But at the end of the day, we're all humans and we all ideally share the value of life. And as we launch into this podcast, we want to give everybody some levity, but we just felt it would be disingenuous to not talk about this and let you all know we're feeling this deeply as well. And we want to talk about running and we want to bring out our guest and talk about it. But we also are here to say that life goes on, but it's been really, really hard. And if you're feeling this, so are we. And we just want you to know that we see you and we hear you, and we hope we have some type of resolution to this as soon as possible.
Very well said, Julie. And I think I really enjoyed talking to our guest today. His email actually brought kind of a, you know, smile to my face on an otherwise week that's been pretty difficult. As anyone who listens to our podcast knows, last week we talked about my experience at the Chicago Marathon. And I mentioned in the podcast that at the airport here at BWI, I happened to see the U.S. Naval Academy marathon team at my gate, and they were on my plane, and how I just was really struck by their maturity, by their, but how really, just what great people they seem to be. And particularly I was struck by the rapport that they had with their coach, which was very visible, very evident, even just somebody sitting in the waiting area, waiting to board the plane, like me, watching them interact with their coach and hearing them talk about their coach. It was clear that they had a lot of respect for him and had really benefited from his guidance. And as a coach myself and as ourselves, I sat there watching, thinking, wow, that's really remarkable. And wouldn't it be neat to get to talk to him and learn about his experience as a coach. And we mentioned this on the podcast last week. We mentioned the interaction. And one of our runners, Dave Corgan, is a member of the Annapolis Striders Running Club, which is a local running club here in the Annapolis, obviously Annapolis area. And he passed the podcast along to one of his friends who he knows the coach of the Naval Academy marathon team. And it got to him, and it got to coach Nathan Noodleman, and he listened to the podcast and he sent us an email that came through just last night, which like I said, was kind of a really a bright spot to get an email from him saying, "I enjoyed the podcast. You should have come said hello at the, in, you know, on the airplane or at the airport." And I wrote back and said that we had just been saying how much we would really like to have him as a guest on the podcast. And lo and behold, we got to talk with him today and interview him today. So really, I feel like I needed something like this. And we just had such a nice conversation with him. You know, he's not just the coach of the U.S. Naval Academy marathon team. He is an extremely, extremely experienced marathoner, which we found as we dug a little deeper into his story and his kind of running past. Chicago Marathon, he actually ran the Chicago Marathon. He ran it more to support the team than for his own time and to support others on the course. It was his 103rd marathon, which is pretty amazing. And his marathon PR is a sub-3. It is 2:54, I believe. And he has run Boston at least 15 or 16 times. So he, in his own account and by his own accord, is an amazingly accomplished athlete and runner. And this team is very lucky to have that knowledge and the resource in their coach. So so he came on today, and we really could have spent all day talking to him about running, about coaching collegiate athletes. What's very unique about the Naval Academy marathon team is that not a lot of colleges that I've heard of or that you've heard of, and we'll have a lot of experience looking at colleges for our kids, have marathon teams. There are cross country teams, there are track and field, but not many have marathon teams or even clubs, club sports. And the ones that we know of are the academies. And we just thought it was really remarkable that especially college age kids that are looking to run marathons. And it was just we were intrigued, and it was really great to have a chance to talk to him and hear a bit more about his experience and his interactions with the midshipmen that he's coached for over 20 years since the marathon team was founded in 2003.
Yeah, he was awesome. So we learned a lot. And we're also going to, in our show notes, share a link where if you're interested in donating to the U.S. Naval Academy marathon team, you can do that. They are a club, and they do not receive a lot of subsidies from the U.S. Naval Academy, and donations will go to their singlets and help out offset their travel and all the things that they do. And these are just a fine, fine group of midshipmen. And it was just so fun to hear all of the ways that he's impacted their lives within running and outside of running.
Yeah. So I think without further ado, we should turn it over to our interview with Coach Nathan Noodleman. And Julie, I hope you manage this week.
Right back at you, Lisa. Bye.
Bye. Coach Nathan Noodleman, welcome to the Run Farther and Faster podcast. If for our listeners who listened to last week's episode, my recap of the Chicago Marathon, I talked about seeing the U.S. Naval Academy marathon team in the airport and how struck I was by the rapport that they had with their great coach. And we happened to mention that, and the podcast made it to you, and you reached out to us to thank us for talking about you. And we had just been talking about wanting to have you on the podcast. So it all worked out, and we are delighted to have you. So welcome to the podcast, and thanks for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Before we get into kind of what you do with the U.S. Naval Academy and your coaching, you have an impressive running background yourself. So if you could just kind of introduce yourselves to our listeners, tell us how old you are, where you live, your family, and a little bit about your running background.
All right. Well, where do we start? All right. So Nathan Noodleman, I'm the coach at the United States Naval Academy for the marathon team. This is our 20th year with the team. The team was founded back in 2003, and I was asked to coach, which we'll get into that here, I guess, later on or shortly. My running background, my two uncles, my Uncle Chuck and my Uncle Neil, talked me into running a marathon back in 1997. And I got done with that marathon. 3 hours, 44 minutes, and 48 seconds. They always say you remember your first. And I had two words to say to them: never again. And My uncle Neil said, "Well, give it a year, give it some time. You'll volunteer and you'll get the bug and you'll run again." And I shook my head. I was like, "Heck no, I'm not doing this." Well, 4 years later, 2001, I ran that same marathon and I wound up qualifying for Boston with a 3:10.56. That's when they gave you the seconds. So I just made it. And in 2002, ran my first Boston and I was pretty much hooked from there. And over the years, there were certain mile markers or certain markers I would hit. And I realized my 34th marathon, which was going to be Boston, which was on my 34th birthday. And I had to get a bunch of marathons in to make that work. And so then I was chasing certain goals and certain times and certain races just to say, hey, I did this. And then we'd fast forward. 2020, I was supposed to run Boston and it was on my birthday and that was going to be my 100th marathon. And of course, we all know that COVID put a damper into everything. And every race I was trying to set up for my 100th marathon kept on falling apart. So fortunately, last year in October, we ran Steamtown Marathon where I ran my first marathon and that was my 100th. And the rest is history. And of course, as we were just discussing just prior, Chicago Marathon was my 103rd marathon. And I'm just down to maybe doing one, maybe two a year, but we'll see where that goes.
That is amazing. And do you have a favorite marathon of all the marathons that you run?
Well, I always joke around. I say, there's two races that I'm not very fond of. And one is the Philadelphia Marathon. So sorry if anybody's listening out there. It was just the couple experiences I had over the time with doing some up there. I just thought the race could be of run better, which again, as races have adjusted and changed over time, they have gotten better. And again, it's been many years. And my other one was, I wasn't very fond of Marine Corps. And the new race director, Alex Harrington, if I said his name correctly, he reached out to the marathon team last year. And actually, it's another segment. The marathon team is actually the first time officially running Marine Corps Marathon. One of my things, and I even said to Alex, was always getting to the start and getting out of the finish area when you get done, especially if you're trying to move a team or have a group of people. The race itself is great because you get to run through all the different parts of DC for fan support. And especially when you're over at Crystal City, you get people back and forth on each side to cheer you on. And the best part is the Marines at the end. But the logistics, just trying to get to that start and trying to get out of there is it's tough. You know, if you're running on your own and you're not dependent on a number of people or have a number of people with you, whole different story, whole different ballgame. So,
yeah, that's, you have unique considerations when you've got a big team that you're trying to get into and out of a race. So I'll be interested to see if they make any changes this year based on your feedback and make it a little bit easier. But I agree that that's probably one of the hardest parts of Marine Corps. Do you have any memorable though? I mean, you have so many races, you have 103. Do you have any that are particularly memorable?
I've run so many and I've run some destination races and each one brings something unique to the table. A lot of my races have been with the marathon team. So like we traveled out to California International Marathon and we got to run that several times. And again, just getting out to California to experience that race. Or I ran Casper Marathon and just a smaller race to run through, you know, Wyoming, you know, just to experience that. But or Arizona. So again, there's something with each race, or like New York I ran New York at least four times and ran with the police department there. And just to experience the start line, to experience how they transport everybody, the fire department there, how they line up at the start line and lock arms. And the 1 year I ran it, I think it was the year Lance Armstrong ran it, and a couple other celebrities. So they got to start right up front. But here we are standing arm to arm, holding back all these other runners that are trying to push up. And it's like, you're not going to get through this police department line or the fire department line, you know, right for the start. So that was, you know, a unique experience to see. We did Miami Marathon. The team went down there. And I think that was in December or January. And I couldn't believe it was still like 90 degrees and super humid that year, which was interesting. But, and then of course my hometown, I'm from Scranton, Pennsylvania, actually Dixon City, which is right next to Scranton. And as I mentioned, Steamtown Marathon, that was my first marathon I did, I completed. And I think in 97, that was the second year for the marathon. And again, you have to look at and do the math because last year was their 25th year, you know, for the marathon.
And you've run so many races. Do you still run for yourself for time, or do you run more for experience, or does it depend on the race?
So for me, and in a roundabout way, for me now, it's showing up at that start line for the team, for the midshipmen. I don't run for time. All I have to do is complete the race. During that race or during a race, I'm out there trying to help somebody. In fact, in Chicago, I had two individuals, I think around mile 13, it was their first time marathoners. One guy grabbed me and asked me to help him to the finish line. He was ready to quit. So it's now, instead, it's not about me, it's about giving back. So it's whoever I could help. As much as it would be easy just to stay at the start finish line and wait for the guys to finish, I enjoy going out there and helping people.
We love that. That is, as coaches ourselves, that's what brings us a lot of joy, especially as we get older and our race times get less important to us. It's helping. And so speaking of giving back, tell us how you've been with the team. You said 20 years. Have you been with the team ever since it was started? And tell us how you know, started working with the team, how you started coaching, how you connected with the team.
Yeah. So, 20 years ago, I was at Annapolis Striders put on a race director's clinic. So Annapolis Striders is a nonprofit running organization here in Annapolis. And I got involved with them when I moved from Pennsylvania down here to the area. And I was at a race director's clinic. And Ron Bowman, who was, I believe he was a 1976 grad, and he was one of the co-organizers for this clinic. And at the end of the clinic, he asked me if I would be interested in coaching. The Naval Academy is trying to put a marathon team together and they need a coach. And just as I'm going to laugh, and if you hear my voice, but I said to Ron, I was like, well, what do I know about coaching? And he's like, well, he goes, you're putting up some good times. You're showing up at the different races. You're here today at this race director's clinic. You have a lot of experience, plus you've played other sports and you're involved. So why don't you just give it a shot? And I took a deep breath and I paused and I said, my two running friends, Dr. Tom Hatter and Lieutenant Colonel John Schoenberg, who I was running with at the time, I was like, hey, is it all right if I ask those two guys to come and maybe help me out or, you know, take a look? Oh, yeah, have them come out. So Midshipman James Cathro, who was the first president of the team, he's the one that reached out to Ron Bowman. And this is where the story begins. Myself, Doc Tom, and John showed up at practice. And we went for a 5 mile run. And it was pretty much like a race. And I was like, there's no way they could keep on doing this for every practice where it's a race. So the two of them wound up assisting me. My schedule is the most flexible. John was with the Air Force and working at Fort Meade, and Doc Tom had his practice, and both of them helped me devise a running plan. And John got promoted, moved to Massachusetts, and then eventually retired. Doc Tom, with his kids and his practice, got super busy. And it pretty much, after about 3 years, was left where, hey, I was the last man standing. And it was like, okay, here we go. And 20 years later, and I can't tell you how many midshipmen that I've coached over the time, as I tell them on the first day of practice, I said, I don't care if you're my fast or my slowest runners. I care that you're out here, that you're trying to better yourself. You're trying to better yourself in a mile and a half run, which is their physical readiness test, or if they're trying to run a marathon and complete a marathon. Eventually, hopefully, I could get them to qualify and run Boston. And what's unique with the marathon team, even though it's a club sport, if they qualify for Boston and run Boston, they actually get a varsity letter and get a varsity sweater, which is really unique, because usually that's just reserved for varsity athletes. But once a team started, 3 years in, the commandant and superintendent took notice to the team and gave us club status, bumped us up from, it was just an intramural, to club status. And that's where everything came together. And again, just as I mentioned about my first marathon, saying never again, if you asked me 20 years ago, would you still be coaching? I would say, get lost. No way. And as we were just talking before too, about your times, your goals, everything else change. I get a year older, these midshipmen for those 4 years, and every time a new midshipman comes in, they stay the same age. And now here I am, I'm 48 years old. These midshipmen are old enough to be my children, where my one daughter is a sophomore at University of Georgia, and my other daughter is a senior in high school. And I look at them and going, wow, where did the time go? So.
Yeah, that's pretty. So that is unique about the U.S. Naval Academy has a marathon team. I mean, to our knowledge, are there a lot of colleges that have marathon teams? And mostly in college, you've got cross country, you've got track and field. But do you know, are there other colleges that have marathon teams? Are they usually intramural or club? And do you have any interactions with those teams?
So as far as I know, it's all there is West Point has a marathon team, and Air Force Academy has a marathon team. So the service academies. Otherwise, for college, not that I know of. No one in the 20 years has reached out from any of the different colleges saying, hey, what's your plan? What do you put together? You know, is there, you know, even elective to say, hey, we're going to run a marathon. It's a 16-week program and, you know, set it up. But as far as I know, no other colleges, which I could be totally wrong. I mean, there's so many colleges that are out there, but there also might be something where it is an intramural sport. It's something that's small where, you know, for the Naval Academy, it's 25 midshipmen that are rostered. And I have a big showing that comes out to practice.
So what is the difference between rostered and practice? How do you get rostered, and how do you, that if you're not rostered? And so how does that determine, are there tryouts? Is there an application process?
Yes. So my big thing is participation. And again, as I mentioned, I don't care if you're my fastest or my slowest runner. I care that you're going to come out to practice. You're trying to better yourself. We do a lot of local races. So like Annapolis 10 miler, which is held in August, it's, not only our first race for the team of the season, but it's also a volunteering event. So Saturday, the midshipmen set everything up. So for each race, and we'll come back to how I pick the roster people, but for each race, I have a point of contact, a POC, and an APOC. So the midshipmen handle everything. So say for Chicago, Conrad Davis, he was in charge of the airfare, getting the hotel reservations, working with Chicago Marathon for our race entries, paying for everything, also with getting the team movement everywhere around Chicago. We had a dinner with the FOP and the Parents Club. The FOP sponsored us at their hall, and the Parents Club provided the meal. And he was in charge of also putting an itinerary together and an after action report. So back to how you get a roster spot, it's stepping up to the plate, and it's more than just running. It's also execution of the team movement and everything else. So with the team, we have a president, a vice president, operations, treasurer, a men's rep, women's rep. We have a PAO, public affairs officer. So one of the midshipmen is in charge with that, who handles the social media side, but also like for Marine Corps Marathon, wrote a nice article and did a whole separate interview part and provided it to Marine Corps to be published for the race. And what else am I missing? As they joke around, the guardian of the jerseys, because our singlets are, we have to recycle them, unfortunately. So the midshipmen, yes, and people out there listening to this podcast go, oh, they got to wear somebody else's jersey. Well, it is expensive, and it's something where trying to get our uniforms or our singlets silk screened and to get them, it's hard to replace them every year. So we save them for our A races. So like Chicago, we'll wear them at Marine Corps and Harrisburg Marathon this year. But like for the Annapolis 10 miler, we had our new shirts, which every year the midshipmen pick a color. We stay with the same logo. It's the Navy Marathon team. And then we have the N star with the 26.2 in the back. And the reason it's on the back of the shirts, when the team first started, we had just white jerseys with light blue lettering. And when you're running and you're looking and saying, is that one of our midshipmen? Is that one of my teammates up ahead? And you couldn't really tell. So when we switched from the white, we went to a navy blue singlet, which that year we did run Chicago right after we switched to those navy blue. And that was the year Chicago Marathon had they wound up shutting down part of the course because they ran out of water and because of the heat. And we wound up then switching to the yellow, but we put the N star on the back because anytime anybody was running, they could pick out their teammates. And now we have these bright yellow singlets. Some of them are full yellow, and then some of them, the newer ones, have a white on the back. But again, running a race, and you probably noticed it in Chicago, Lisa, you could pick out our guys pretty easily. Yes, there's a number of other colors, but the yellow definitely stands out. Even though some of the mids are like, oh, why do we have to have these ugly yellow ones? But at least we still don't have yellow shorts to wear with them.
So I wanted to kind of ask you what it looks like in terms of when recruits come and want to participate in the team. It's open to everyone, I assume. But how does it work in terms of, some people are obviously faster than others, and you, of course, determine who participates by their very participation throughout the term of the training. But what do you do when you have a runner who's really struggling and you know they're trying their best? And or what do you do to support your runners when you see that they're training too hard or they're on the verge of injury?
All right, so several questions there. We'll start with the first part is our practices, and our practices are Tuesdays and Thursdays. So we meet out at Gate 8 every Tuesdays and Thursday, and everybody meets up in the beginning. And depending on what the run is, it doesn't matter, again, if you're the fastest runner or the slowest runner, everybody leaves that point together, okay? The groups wind up breaking up where if you get a little faster runners in one part and slower runners in another, but we go to certain locations, you know, throughout Annapolis to do our workouts. And if we're doing interval workout, sometimes that slower runner gets definitely pulled out of their comfort zone and has to try running faster with a faster runner. But at the same time, when we're doing these runs, such as if we're coming back where my faster runners are out front, I put them behind the slower runners. So the slower runners hold back the faster runners which helps in the overall. Because, and as both of you know, with training, the hardest thing is holding back. And especially your warm-up and cool downs, you know, these midshipmen, you know, they're 18 years old to 21 years old, and they just want to go fast. But there's a time and place for it. So trying to balance everything where when you're going out there on that run, trying to hold everybody together. And as I say, that fast runner could benefit from the slow runner, and that slow runner benefits from the fast runner. And that's where trying to put people together. Or when we do the interval work out where it's, look, don't let the person behind you catch you, and you want to catch the person in front of you. So trying to push on that end. Now, on different degrees of experience and that aspect, certain parts I have to have certain mids go farther, certain ones will go shorter. A lot of our runs are time runs, so I'm not necessarily concerned about the mileage. And that makes a big difference, because a lot of people get hooked into, I have to get 5 miles in, I have to get this in, and people either blow it out of the water, or if, say, it's a 90-degree day, and that 5 miles, it took them so long, well, then they're mentally beat. So a lot of our runs, it's based off of time-wise. Hey, you got to go off for 60 minutes. I don't care how fast it is. And we work through that aspect. So did that answer all your questions on that part? Did I hit that, or did I miss one?
Just one additional question is, how do you support your runners when they're on the verge of injury and or they are injured?
Okay, so on the injured aspect, which, knock on wood, like over the years, I've had midshipmen who have gotten injured, some from running, but some from, especially when they go on spring break or they play other sports like basketball, or they go roller skating, or they go skateboarding and they wind up getting injured. But if they do get injured, then what I do is I'll pull them aside and they'll do a lighter workout, or they'll just, even just by them coming out to check in at practice, then they'll go back on the yard and either go and use a spin bike, elliptical, they'll go in the pool and work through that. So I do make an adjustment. Or if we're doing the interval day, I might have them run with myself, or just jog out with the team, and then I'll have them do something else in that same area. But so they're still at least doing something versus not doing anything at all.
With your team, do you give them kind of a group schedule? I think I saw on the website there was a schedule, and there's like a group schedule. Are you able to individualize, like you're talking about, some people come in with different, you know, or doing different businesses? It sounds like a lot of it's by time, so that makes sense to us, especially as coaches. But do you feel like you're able to kind of individualize training for, and I think that's a lot of the coaches we talk to, high school athletes, say it's so hard. You've got this big group and it's hard to individualize. Do you feel that same challenge?
No, not at all. My schedule that's posted up there, and it's very generic. And I say that just because years ago, I used to write real detailed and it used to get published. And unfortunately, and again, if you're one of the people listening to this that took my programs and used them or whatever else, shame on you. So I keep it very simple, what's posted on there. And again, how I coach, especially the midshipmen, that's a whole unique group in itself. You have to remember, you know, their studies, they have physical readiness that they have to do in the morning. Certain ones are company officers where they lead certain physical training aspects. So I make adjustments for them. And yes, I have my general plan with with the schedules, but there's a lot of stuff that's on there that you might not see or anybody else sees, where they have their PRT, their physical readiness test, on a Saturday. And yet I have a certain workout set up, but there's certain parts. Yes, I'm gearing for the marathon, but I'm also gearing them so they can max out on their mile and a half run. So I do make the adjustments on that part. Plus the other aspect with me being at practice every Tuesday and Thursday, if it's 90 degrees, I make a difference. I make a call on it. If it's really cold out and we have a wind chill, then I make adjustment. I also look at, like right now we're coming off of from Chicago, so they're on a 2-week recovery. So I have that group where we're doing a recovery run, and then I'm working one-on-one with all the Chicago ones to make sure I could get them back up to full speed. But at the same time, I have that other group who are planning to run Marine Corps in 2 weeks. So I have that group that's out there where, and I'm lucky to have some help with staff at the Academy. So I'm going to give a couple shouts out right now. Lieutenant Commander Casey Rayberg, who is my officer rep for well over 6 years. He was in the math department. He retired last year, but he still comes out to practice. He retired from the Navy, but he's back at the Academy, still teaching math, which he's a great help. I also have Major Whitney Irby, who's a 2012 grad, and she ran for me and graduated, and she's back at the school teaching leadership, and now she is the OREP for the team. So she comes out for practice, which she's able to help on certain aspects. I have Commander Jennifer Matthews, who she's in the math department. She's the head over there, which, again, this goes back to Casey, who he's grabbed a bunch of math department professors and teachers, and they've come out to practice. So she's out there where she's able to help on a certain aspect. I had Commander Chris Martino, who just retired from the Navy. He helped me for a couple of years where, again, he was able to come out and assist in certain aspects running with certain midshipmen. Professor Rob Curry, who he just left the Academy last year. He moved to Arkansas with his family, who's a professor in the math department as well. And then I have Professor Chris Staruski, who's actually assistant professor, which he came to Chicago, and he comes out to practice. And having the different professors and Academy personnel there help with my job. Because at the same time, where if I have a one-on-one with the midshipmen and the runs going on, I have runners that could go out with the team and go to certain locations to make sure they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. Why, again, back to what Julie asked about injured runners, where if I'm dealing with a one-on-one where I'm trying to help them with their needs and I can't get my run in, then they're out there helping.
And what a nice thing.
I think I covered everybody. Oh, and I got one alibi. Mark Husky, who is in charge, he's with the Navy band, but he's in operations, and I'm not sure on his official title, but he is enlisted in the Navy, and he winds up coming out to practice as well. And his wife ran Chicago, and unfortunately, due to his commitments with the Navy, he was unable to come with the team to Chicago.
What a nice way too for the professors and the different the adults at the Academy to be able to interact with some of the midshipmen. I think that's a nice opportunity. And you mentioned the unique challenges of coaching midshipmen. And you mentioned earlier too, these kids who come out and they want to run fast, they want to run hard. From our experience, marathoners who are in their 18, 19, 20 years old, that's super young for marathoners. And a lot of them don't know what they're doing and they're young and they're stupid, for lack of a better way of explaining it. But what are the unique considerations that kind of come into play? You touched on a couple of them, but in coaching, I mean, essentially they're older youth, but they're still somewhat youth athletes. And those that are midshipmen, I would also think that their work ethic comes into play and that they're very dedicated to their training. But what are some of the unique considerations that apply to students or, midshipmen that you coach?
So the hardest thing with them is, and I kind of alluded to or mentioned, but it's to hold them back. It's actually to slow them down, to realize it's not all about going fast. It's getting the time on their legs. And as I explained to them, and again, you ladies might recall or whatever else, the old rule of thumb was you had to put 100-mile weeks in. You had to put all this distance in. There wasn't much about the interval works, or it was more quantity versus quality. And years ago, I switched the training plan and switched everything to quality over quantity. And ever since I changed that around, I've had more men and more women, more midshipmen set personal best from race to race. But again, going back to that, the biggest thing is the warmups, the cool downs, and to get them to realize, hey, you have to slow down. You can't just be going out super fast and it's going to help you in the long run, which, as you could see from the results that I shared just with Chicago, you know, I had 15 set personal bests in the men, anywhere from 3 minutes to 11 minutes. And yeah, granted, yeah, we had ideal temperatures, everything else, but it's still 26.2 miles. And, you know, Chicago's unique because it's all flat. And as you mentioned in your last podcast, you know, you have that last hill at the end. You have also that little bridge in the one part. Like, you know, here's with the midshipmen in Annapolis, where a lot of our training for Chicago was the same courses over and over again. And I think they were going to kill me a couple of times. They're like, Coach, why do we have to go and do that route again? I was like, are you running Chicago? Yes, I'm running Chicago. You'll understand. It's that same muscle group over and over again. But again, going back to, it's just trying to hold them back from going too fast. And it's also on the recovery days where, as you notice on my schedule, I write 30 minutes in there. I know that they're going to go 40, 50 minutes or whatever, but at least they know that, hey, we got to go out slower, because then when we do like an interval work, like a pyramid workout, I could see who listened and followed the plan. Because if they're not doing what they're doing, I pull them aside and talk to them. Because again, the whole goal of everything, it's trying to get, what is your race? What are you planning for? What are you doing? We're planning for Chicago. What do you want to do? I want to set personal best. I want to qualify for Boston. That's your goal. That's what we're going to focus on. So what you have to do is take the training as a whole and break it down to say what I'm doing today, even though, yes, I feel good, I want to go an extra couple miles, you got to restrain yourself and you got to come home. Or as of right now, we're doing the recovery stuff. As they say to the mids, and we go out and do it, I said, you're going to think this is stupid. You're going to say, why are we walking? Why are we skipping? Why are we doing, you know, a little bit of run sideways? Why are we doing this? And I say, in 2 weeks, you'll totally understand. Versus in years past, we jump right back in. And again, when I was saying the rule of thumb was you had to put those high mileage in, but also the rule of thumb was every mile you raced, you had to take a day off. And then that whole philosophy switched to, you know, active recovery. And the active recovery, I've actually seen the guys and girls, the midshipmen, actually recover quicker. And actually from one race to another race, even a month later, actually even improve.
I just want to say, I think what you're doing is remarkable, because while it's so wonderful that all of these midshipmen have athletic pursuits, I think for their mental health, their first time away from home, living without family, you've provided them a structure and mentors and sort of a family for these kids. And I would imagine that they are so grateful to have that as they navigate a very rigorous program. Can you talk a little bit about, and don't be shy about this, about the difference that you've made as their coach on these kids over the years?
Yeah.
Add a little story. When I was at the airport, I heard you say to one of the midshipmen, I think you had coached his sister as well, and you had introduced him, I think, maybe to somebody else and said, oh, don't you remember his sister? And I thought that was really neat to see that you probably coached several members of a family, or, you know, and that you probably have relationships that have lasted a long time. So I just wanted to inject that while you're thinking about how, you know, how you feel as a coach, you can help these form really shape their lives, or at a really, part of their lives when they're forming their identities.
Yeah. So, okay. Where do we go with this one? All right. So a couple things is, as I mentioned, we run at gate eight. We used to run starting at the goat, and the big part of the team is getting off the yard. The midshipmen spend a lot of time, pretty much, I would say 24 hours a day on the yard in Annapolis, and they have very free time to get out of, you know, that whole environment where they're told what to do, how to walk, you know, uniform, everything else. This is a way when they leave their Bancroft, they leave their dorms, their rooms, their ward room, and they jog or walk the mile out to gate eight. Now they're outside. And the relationships that they start developing, because it's not only with their companies, now they're meeting other runners that are like-minded, and they're able to find a new friendship. I've had, in fact, James Cathro that I mentioned, his wife, Lindsay Duncan, now Lindsay Cathro, they met on the team and they got married and now they have two kids. And in fact, Lindsay is back at the academy and she's teaching in the math department. And and we should start back. That was 2003. And, here it is 20 years later where they have two children and she is back at the academy. Also, Wallace Miller, who's a commander and he's at the academy teaching. And I coached him, or I mentioned Whitney Irby. She graduated in 2012. But what's unique with the midshipmen, especially having a co-ed team, where years ago people, midshipmen wanted like, hey, why don't we have a women's marathon team? Let's have a men's marathon team. And it's like, no, there's a reason why this works. For some odd reason, when the guys and girls, they all get together and the rapport that they build and the relationships that not only they develop at the academy, but afterwards. And as Julie, you just asked, and yes, I'm in touch with a lot of my midshipmen, a lot of them. Curtis Prentice, who graduated, he was a 2005 grad, reached out to me about Chicago. Mossy King, which would be a good person to talk to. He was an Annapolis Strider as well. He ran for me, accomplished ultra marathoner, extraordinaire, everything else. But I talked to him quite frequently. We were at the airport in Chicago when we got to Midway. And Lisa, I don't know, did you get to see the parents group there when you...
I did. I thought that was so neat when I was leaving we were leaving and that we saw welcome U.S. Naval Academy. That is so neat. And then I saw in the report that was the local parents group. That's a really, yes. That was special. I don't know
if you noticed, so my pullover that I have, the zip pullover, it says, coach on it and United Navy Marathon Team. It's really faded. It's my original one. One of the parents actually had one on at the airport. And Julie, just to tie this in, his son ran for me, and I think he was a 2020 grad. He has four girls right now. He graduated, and he actually pinned on. He's a Navy SEAL, but his dad was wearing his pullover, and I also coached his sister and brother at the academy as well. So again, there's so much, over the years. And I was mentioning before, I said, I don't care if you're my fastest or my slowest, but also I said, I'm terrible with names. I'm good with faces. I'll eventually learn who you are. You just got to bear with me. I've been doing this a long time. And, the first day coming out to practice, I had 115 midshipmen that came out to practice. And yes.
Wow.
Yes. Yes. And here it is 20 years later. And when I first coached, when we first started, I had 15 midshipmen. And I was lucky to have 15 midshipmen. I had 12 men and 3 women. That's what I had that came out to practice. And again, going back to, I mentioned about the men and women and having it, there's something that works. There's something that happens here. Over the years, over the 20 years, I've coached 4 midshipmen that were number one in their graduating class. The one year I recall, I think I had 10 in the top 20, where that year it was number one and number two. So not only talented runners, but you're talking on educational wise and smarts, like the top. I've also had 15 pin on for Navy SEALs. Who ran on the team. And I tell you, coaching them, they definitely stand out in a whole different dynamic. And of course, they went over to that side, and you know, the determination and the vigors that they have to go through. Again, I saw them, especially with running wise, where they jump from one race to another and watch them push their bodies to extremes. So it's been really, really unique. I think Julia got off your questionnaire. Sorry about that. But
no, not at all. It's just, I think what you're doing is remarkable because it also is supporting their mental health. I mean, that's the things you probably don't see, but I would imagine if you were to interview all of these thousands of midshipmen you've coached, they would unequivocally say that you have supported them during a very challenging time in their lives.
Yes. And you are correct. Cause I do hear from, again, as I mentioned, from the different mids, I hear from different times of their life, everything else, they'll reach out and say, "Hey coach, you know, thanks for teaching me that or showing me that. I know I didn't understand at the time, but I got it now." And that's the whole thing. It's just not the running aspect. And yes, it is getting off the yard for that mental aspect to get them out of there, to relieve that stress, to help them. But at the same time, just as I mentioned about the after action report, the itinerary, getting them to move people, it's actually a class in itself. It's setting them up for life afterwards, because the school is very regimented on what they teach. And a lot of times it's like, "Hey, you got to be here at this time. You got to stand here." But now you're in charge. And again, they left mom and dad and here they are at the academy, and they got to be developed. And I like to say, I'm trying to help them in the best possible way. So
you clearly are, and it just sounds like, and it looked like to me, just watching them in action, that they've developed the characteristics that overlap between, you know, their role as midshipmen, but also as marathoners, and their dedication that it takes to training, and what they've learned from you, with respect to holding back sometimes, all of those lessons they've learned. It seems, you know, there's a lot of overlap in their success, in their success in life. So clearly that, like I said, that was what really struck me the most when I saw your rapport with them, and I had heard them talking about you before you even got there. They revere you, and their respect for you, and they really, you could tell just in my short conversation with them how much they respected you. And these are current students, so I'm sure the ones that have already passed through your program would say the same. So let's talk briefly. We want to talk about Chicago a little, because it sounds like you guys had an amazing time in Chicago, and you were talking to us before we started recording, the Chicago Marathon race director, Carrie Pinkowski, who we've had on the podcast before. Typically, didn't get to this year, but typically meets with you guys and, welcomes you to Chicago. And I know you talked about, you know, the parents club there that welcomed you and set up the dinner. So tell us a little bit about what it was like in Chicago and the experience in Chicago, and what you'll take away from the Chicago, because you ran it as well.
So, as you mentioned in your podcast, it's a whirlwind weekend. It's a quick weekend. Getting out of Annapolis, out of Maryland, getting to Chicago, getting to Midway, getting to the hotel, the expo, the dinner, the race. And then I don't know what time you left on Sunday or Monday, but we left the hotel at 02:30 in the morning.
I saw that in the report. I thought that is brutal that they had to wake up at that time in the morning.
And then we got a 5 o'clock flight back to Annapolis. So it's a whirlwind weekend, and we'll get into Chicago a little bit more. I want to jump into your podcast real quick. What you said, and we're just talking about the rapport and what you saw at the airport. And it was funny. You mentioned it amidst said about, "We have to be at the expo at this time, specifically at this time." And I laughed at that, because how many times the midshipmen go, "Coach, why do we have to be in our STBs?" So that was their standard dress blues. So their uniform. "Why do we have to go so early? Why do we have to do this?" And again, as a coach, not only for the running aspect, I'm trying to explain to them everything. Okay, "Coach, why do we have to, why are we getting such a late flight? Why are we here?" And again, this is part of the training. It's trying to put everything together, because I hope one day that they're in my shoes, or they're the O-rep, and they're doing this where they can look at it and say, "Hey, look, this is what we have to do." So going back to, you know, just leaving on Friday, we've left earlier from school where we got the midshipman got excused from classes, but then we sat in traffic going to BWI, and then we're stressing trying to get to the gate. We flew into O'Hare at times. And then once you get in O'Hare, if you get in there early, then you're sitting in the traffic trying to get to the hotel. So again, the best of both worlds. Now it's like, look, we leave at the academy when classes get out. We get to get Chipotle, whatever food. They get to relax a little bit. We get to Midway. Now, once we got to Midway, my friend Dave, who is a Chicago police officer, set us up with a contact, and we had a nice party bus. They do wine tours and everything else, but they had the music, the funky lights. Josh Daugherty, one of the midshipmen, got to play DJ on the bus. But he set it up for us where we had this bus. The midshipmen were able to get on there. And then it was just a quick drive to our hotel downtown Chicago versus, again, instead of sitting in traffic dealing with that aspect. Now, we got to the hotel by 11 o'clock at night. Just prior, the parents club had a nice meet and greet. They hung some signs. They give all the midshipmen little bags with they made up stickers for Chicago with the Navy logo in there. They had a bunch of water, snacks, everything else. So that was a nice little thing that they do. So again, just that welcoming to Chicago, especially for a lot of these midshipmen. Again, wherever they're from, they never got to experience this. They never got to get to Chicago or to a big city. So this is a first for them. And then from there, getting to the hotel where, hey, at least we got a decent night's sleep. You know, we meet up at 8 o'clock in the morning. We head out to that expo. My whole thing is just trying to get to the expo, trying to get in there first thing so they have some liberty. They have some time to go and see the city. If they have family members that are there, which I had, I apologize, I don't know what the count was on families, but ever since COVID, I've had more family members show up to the different races from Boston to Chicago to Steamtown to Harrisburg, and are a big part of it. So they got to spend the time with their parents. And with this race, I had three midshipmen that their parents were running the race. So that was a big deal as well. But again, it was to show the participation aspect. Plus I had two midshipmen. One flew in from West Point, who she's detailed there for a semester. And the other one flew in from the Air Force Academy, who's out there for a semester. So they got in at different hours, but to have them to come and meet back up with the team. And then they were sharing their experiences so far the semester at West Point, or sharing their experience at Air Force and sharing it back with the team. So then going into the expo, as you know, it's the security lines, everything else to get through. But we get into that expo and one of the volunteers immediately grabs one of my mids because they're all in uniform and says, "Where's your coach? Where's your coach?" And they immediately grab me, give me a bracelet. Our team goes over, we get through the purple P line, and then we meet up with Dave Wiskowski, who's the operations manager with Chicago. Now back to Carrie Pinkowski. In fact, just prior to us talking at noon today, he gave me a call apologizing that he wasn't able to meet the team. Due to, of course, the global events, everything else, because again, he's one of the world majors, you know, marathons, and you know, there's 48,000 runners, and if you think every runner brought at least one spectator, and then you think of everybody else in the city coming out, I mean, it's a big security plan, it's a big part for him. But Carrie, for as busy as he always is, he still takes time to at least reach out, text to me, or a phone call. Or in years past, he always comes out and speaks to the team. So even though he didn't come out for this race due to the global stuff, in Boston, he'll meet us and speak to the team. And again, what I implored back to the midshipmen, you always have to remember how busy you are in life or anything else. You still have to remember to take time out to speak to your people, to do it. Don't ever think that you're bigger and better than anybody. You have to just put it on a level across the board. And that's what's nice with, especially the relationship I have with Carrie, but also with the support he gives to our team and everything else to have them experience it. So back to the expo, getting into the expo, getting their bibs, and then I tell the midshipmen, go ahead, break up and work your way up and down the line. Speak to people, talk to people. And then as they're going through there, they don't know who they're talking to. You know, there might be a grad. There is somebody that's in there. There's somebody that that's looking to come out to the Naval Academy. Again, it's them putting their impression onto somebody else. And then from there, they get a couple hours liberty. They get to see Chicago. So the Bean, if they want to go to Hancock, they just Magnificent Mile, you know, just to take in the sights. And then we do a team dinner. So the Fraternal Order of Police, my friend Dave DeSantis, who's a Chicago police officer, but also on the board of trustees with the FOP, was nice enough to allow us to use their hall. They had a nice setup in there for us. The Parents Club was generous enough. They wound up getting a nice pasta dinner. A couple of the parents made some vegan dishes, some rice, some beans, some salads, and we had a nice cake. And Josh and Conrad actually were the masters of ceremony. So they got up there and they gave a little speech. They said a benediction before we ate, presented the Parents Club with a poster, presented a poster and a hat to Dave. And again, the midshipmen got to experience a different aspect of Chicago. And from there, then it's back to the hotel, a good night's sleep. And Lisa, and I think her last name's Perez with Fleet Feet. They were nice enough. I think this is maybe our third time with them. And this is through Carrie setting up where we went to the Roosevelt University. We had a room there where we dropped our gear. We were able to use the facilities there. She posed for a picture with the team, and we were quick right out to the corrals. Years past, we got up earlier, spent a lot of time, but this time around, I tried balancing, giving them that extra little bit of sleep, and I think it paid off. I would have to look at my time, my results from before, but yeah, it's that's a little hectic getting to the start line. But again, the mids at least got there, and we had enough time because we walked a mile and a half from our hotel to the start line, which I know you took. How did you get there, Lisa?
I walked about a little less than a mile, but also walked to the start line.
Okay.
So, seemed like what kind of the easiest thing to do if you're within a couple.
Yes, once you're there. So I didn't know because you were staying out at Midway, so I wasn't sure on.
Yeah, I came in the night. I stayed at Midway the first night, and then Saturday came in and stayed closer to the. Stayed on LaSalle, so much closer.
Okay, so you're right. I did get in. You understand all those people. You know, you're trying to get through everything. You know, to do it, and it's a lot. And then you know, trying to get to the bathrooms and the aspect, and you know, if you get in those corrals too early, where are you going? You know, you're stuck in there. And then years past, and again, I don't know if how many Chicago's you've done, but we've been there where it's been really warm, and then when you're there next to all these bodies shoulder to shoulder, it gets even warmer. And it's like it's a balance again, just trying to say, all right, when do I have to get to my corral, and you know, what's too soon, what's too late, and everything else.
Right. Yeah. Well, it sounds like you know, had it worked out. And from your results, I mean, you had results everywhere from a 2:34 finish to a 4:46 finish, and you had, you ran, and I know another a professor ran, and you said, like you said, you had parents run, so you really, you had kind of the gamut from all finish times, but like you mentioned before, so many PRs, so many BQs, so many, throughout the whole range of finish times. So clearly, you've done something right. Do you feel like the midshipman felt like it was a successful day out there?
As you, for everybody on the podcast, I'm giving two thumbs up because it was definitely a success. I might never ever set a personal best ever again. And you know what? I'm fine with that. I'm just happy to see somebody else accomplish their goal. And like, as we mentioned, from anywhere from 3 minutes to 11 minutes in the Boston qualifiers, hey, it was a success. I'm super happy. I wish I could say it was all for my coaching, but it's them out there doing the 26.2 miles. It's them doing the homework. I'm just trying to provide them a guide to do the right thing. And at the same time, I was ecstatic. I was ecstatic with everything. And again, just very happy all the way around.
Well, we understand as coaches, but I would also say it's not just doing all of that. That's very important what you do. And we always tell our runners too, we give you the plan, it's you that's executing it, but they are obviously looking to you for guidance, and they are, again, they're young, and for a lot of them, these are their first marathons, or maybe if not their first, but their first marathons, are still learning. So they're really fortunate to have you. And like I said, the one thing I took away from that interaction when I left, I said, that was so cool to see how much they really respect and have a great rapport with their coach. So that's what really, really struck me. So we know you have, you've got coaching to get to this afternoon, and we could probably talk to you forever about coaching. And Julie and I both have kids that are similar in age to your kids, who are seniors in high school or in college. So we could probably also talk about college students all day long, and being parents of college students and masters athletes and runners, who are in their 40s and 50s. So we could talk all day. What advice would you give, for anyone who's listening, who either has a kid who's looking to go to college and maybe pursue marathoning, and maybe doesn't have a team like this, or for somebody who might be listening, who is younger and who's going to college, what advice would you have for somebody who is thinking about doing this in college, or maybe it's even an adult who's thinking about getting into marathoning?
One of the best things, stress reliever wise, is running. You could always take your sneakers with you wherever you go, and you could run anywhere to experience the sights, the sounds, the smells of wherever city, whatever country, wherever you go in the world. And it's something where if you are going to train and put that dedication for a marathon, and I'm going to jump back where I take my mom, for example, she went to Boston and supported me back in 2002. And I think it was maybe in 2004, she was like, you know what? I would like to run a marathon. My mom was never athletic, never, ever whatsoever. So, and I get a little teary eye here because this is a good story here. So she would always walk the dogs, and I would tell my mom, look, mom, every route when you're walking those dogs, start out, just run from telephone to telephone pole. And then every time you go out, just go a little bit further. And eventually you'll be able to run a marathon. So I think it was 2000 and, oh geez, I want to say 5 or 6, she ran her first marathon. As she'll tell you, she goes, I'm slow, but she did it. I think it was right around 6 hours. But at the same time, she was working for a pediatrician who was, he was an army guy, which we won't hold it against him, Dr. Paul. And she got him to train and run a marathon. He lost all this weight. He wound up putting his dress uniform back on that he wore in the military back when he was in the Army. And she wound up getting him into it. And my other cousins, my sister, and other people across the board, and this goes back to my Uncle Chuck that I mentioned in the beginning. My Uncle Chuck's philosophy was you get one runner to run, they get two people to run, they get four people, six people. More people to run, the bigger the party it is. So for anybody that's out there that's looking at possibly getting into running, short goals first. Get out there and walk. Get out there and walk and maybe run from one traffic light to another traffic light. Set those short-term goals. But ultimately, look at trying to set it up. Check the box for a 5K. Check the box for a 10K. I have a person I work with. He's 60 years old. He was a Marine. And he said to me months ago, hey, I really would possibly look at running Marine Corps marathons. I never ran a marathon in my life. I've been running. I've been doing this. I've had some aches and pains. And set him up with an easy plan just to, as I just mentioned, a 5K, a 10K, just starting out slow. Well, he's running Marine Corps come
next weekend.
yeah, next weekend, the 29th. And to talk to him every night at work and to hear from him and saying, hey, those aches and pains are gone. You know, I got this in my training. I didn't think I was going to be able to do that 16-mile run or that 20-mile run. If you gave me this plan in the beginning and I saw I had this 20-mile run, he goes, I would have quit. So if somebody's out there, again, looking at it, don't look at the overall plan. Look at it in segments. As I was telling people in the marathon, what's easier to picture, running to that traffic light or the finish line? Well, that traffic light. Okay, let's get to that traffic light and then let's pick the next goal. And just those short-term ones where you could reward yourself, everything's going to fall into place. It's the same thing where if you have a puzzle, you throw a 1,000-piece puzzle and you look at it going, I got 1,000 pieces put together here. But you got to start somewhere. You know, you start at the corners, you start at the edges, you start at the picture that makes the most sense. You got to start somewhere. You got to start out easy and you have to work through it and you can't get frustrated. Everybody struggles one way or the other. You just have to remember every step, everything that you're doing is to get to that ultimate goal. And that ultimate goal, and again, if it's just your first time marathoner, you have one goal. And Lisa and Julie, she probably say the same thing. All you have to do is finish. And the thing is, no one could ever take that away from you. If somebody says, oh, it took you 5 hours to do it. You know what? You can't beat me out, but screw you. I finished a race. Where were you? I was sitting on a couch. You ever run a marathon? No, I haven't. Well, guess what? You did it. Okay. And that's the first thing. And I always tell everybody, all you have to do is finish. And the second goal, hey, if you want to hit a certain time, you shoot for it. And the third thing, yes, if you could qualify for Boston or set some crazy PR time, then that's all well and good. But all you have to do is finish and never take that away from you. And it's an experience that you'll never, ever, I don't know. I don't know if you guys remember your first marathon or whatever else, even though I said never again. And I couldn't walk. I actually threw up from the oranges afterwards and, you know, I was miserable, but that experience of everything, it still sits with me, you know, today.
That's clear. And like you said, you get one person to run and look how many people you've helped run. And it's even outside of the midshipmen, it's been, you know, your mother, which I think is an amazing story. So that's what you've done. And you know, it has been such an honor to get to talk to you. I think it's just so funny that, you know, I started out when I saw the team and I saw you and I thought, wouldn't that be fun to have you as a guest on the podcast? And here you are. So thank you so much. And we hope to keep in touch with you. We're at Annapolis every year. I've seen the team every year I've been in Annapolis. So we'll make sure to come say hello and, you know, best of luck to your runners. Or I always like to say luck is not a strategy, but strong races to all of your runners that are obviously well-trained and well-prepared for everything that they have coming up. So Julie, did you want to?
Yeah, Coach Nate, just one more question. Where can people find you and the team and how can people support your team?
Okay, so, our team, if you go on usna.edu and then you put in marathon team, you go through the sports and you can find on that aspect. I'll make sure our PAO is updating the website. We always update usually after the fact. We don't put stuff. We do have an Instagram page, which... I don't know where it is. I would have to ask my daughter. I'm not.
You'll find it.
You'll find it. And then the other part, again, if anybody ever wanted to donate or anything to the team, it's just through club sports, just in any of the club sports there. But just note, you know, marathon team or marathon club. And then that helps us, you know, get to the races, because we are limited, funded through the school. A lot of our races that we do are, granted, are local, but just like we do team shirts. So the little bit of the $2 or $3 that we make on the team shirts helps with the transportation aspect, because that's the big part with these races. It's trying to get somewhere, trying to get to the airports, such as like from Midway to, you know, the hotel and different aspects on that part. That's what helps us with the transportation, and then also the entry fees. Because as we know, with the races over the years, especially because of security plans, everything else, it's a big chunk of change. We did take a big group to Chicago, which we alternate every other year. So next year we'll be going to Steamtown Marathon, which again, it's my hometown, nice, smaller feel, but again, it's a balance back and forth. And of course we'll be at Marine Corps and at Harrisburg.
Great. We will put all of those links in our show notes. And like I said, we look forward to seeing you and the team at upcoming races. And thank you again for spending your time with us today.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm sorry I'm so long-winded, and hopefully.
No, it's been great. Like I said, we could talk to you all day, so we appreciate it. So thanks again.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to the Run Farther and Faster Boston Marathon podcast. We want to give a special thanks to our editor, Aaron Bryant. And if you enjoyed this episode and enjoy listening to our podcast, please share it with others, and please leave a review if you haven't done so already on iTunes. Thanks for listening, and have a great week.